Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. In the front lines of that war, of course, are our friends in Israel. They are confronting various threats, which ultimately have us in their crosshairs, of course, as well. No one understands those threats better and has done more, I think, to illuminate them for the rest of us than our first guest. She is Carolyn Glick. She is the director of the David Horowitz Freedom Center's Israel Security Project and an adjunct fellow, I'm pleased to say, at the Center for Security Policy. She's a columnist at the highly regarded Jerusalem Post, and the author of several very important works, including most recently, The Israeli Solution, a one-state plan for peace in the Middle East. Carolyn Glick, welcome back. It's good to have you with us, as always.
Oh, it's great to talk to you, my friend Frank.
Listen, I wanted to start by thanking you for a very important piece that you did recently concerning the difference between politicians and leaders, and how urgently we need the latter, and unfortunately how many of the former we seem to have. Talk a little bit about the differences between the two and how it bears on where we find ourselves in this war for the free world.
Well, what I talk about in my article is the fact that really in order to be a leader as opposed to just a guy who gets elected a lot is you have to be willing to speak hard truths to people. You have to be able to tell people not only what they want to hear, but also what they don't want to hear, and try to challenge them to be better than they are. And that's real leadership. And it usually only is forced out of somebody in times of trouble or when they're faced with immoral acts being conducted by various people. So in my article, I was expressing this against the backdrop two speeches that took place week before last on Wednesday. One was President Obama's speech regarding the campaign that he's intending to carry out against the Islamic State terrorists in Iraq and Syria, and the other one was a speech that Senator Ted Cruz gave to an audience of Christians from the Middle East, where he challenged them on their anti-Semitic positions and their anti-Semitic view of Israel and of Jews. And it was a very difficult speech for him to make. And yet I thought that unlike President Obama, he really demonstrated true leadership when he made that speech, because he was speaking very hard truths to people who did not want to hear them.
Yeah. And fundamentally, this really did expose a problem within the Arab Christian community with respect to Israel. And as you say so well in your article, that, you know, unless all of those forces who have a common interest in defeating this Islamist enterprise, the global jihad, pull together, they will be defeated separately. It's the old Ben Franklin line, we'll hang separately if we don't hang together.
Well, I think that that's certainly true of Middle Eastern Christians. I don't think that that's true of Israel. I think that the ally that they need the most is Israel. And the ally that they want the least is Israel. They would accept anybody before. They would accept, you know, ISIS before they accepted Israel, because, you know, not all of them. I mean, the Christians in Israel are demanding to have the Ministry of the Interior stop defining them as Arabs and call them Aramaeans. I mean, they just passed a new the Minister of the Interior 2 days ago just announced that there would be such a new designation because the Christians no longer want to be considered Arabs in Israel, because they recognize that their future stands with being citizens of Israel, not with any other identity. And so That's why they're embracing it so strongly and joining the IDF and integrating fully into Israeli society by their own desire. And the Christians outside of Israel, on the other hand, they still embrace this replacement theology, the supersessionism, which is, of course, anti-Semitic, and also the pan-Arab, which is now effectively defunct among Muslims, the pan-Arab fascism that formed the basis of the Ba'ath Party and other anti-Semitic fascist parties that were not specifically Islamic beginning back in the 1930s.
This is really the backdrop for part of what I also wanted to visit with you about, Carolyn, and that is your analysis of the speech that President Obama gave, or the so-called strategy that he unveiled in it. Where do you think it falls short in terms of protecting America's interests and security, as well as those of allies, vital allies like Israel?
I think it isn't a strategy. I mean, it's a talking points memo, and its goal is really to get him through the next news cycle without being attacked for being completely irresponsible and incompetent. But basically, the plan of action that Obama set out is based, first of all, fundamentally on denying the very nature of the enemy by saying that Islamic State is not Islamic, which of course it is, and then he said it's not a state, which to all intents and purposes it is, because it controls an enormous amount of territory and it has an army, and it's instituting its law, such as it is, over the areas that it governs or that it controls. So, you know, it's everything that he said was wrong. So stemming from the fact that he claims that it's not Islamic, he's not willing to have any sort of an ideological war against them, which is absolutely necessary if only to prevent new recruits from coming in. Second of all, you know, since he says they're not a state, what we're going to do is launch a counterterrorism operation against them. But really, I mean, this is an army that has defeated standing armies. They defeated the Iraqi army. They defeated the Syrian army. And you want to treat them like they're Al Qaeda that are in Afghanistan at the pleasure of the Taliban. I mean, it just means that he's not really serious, because you can't beat them that way. You can only beat them with a strategy for beating a military and for beating an ideology that he's ignoring. So it's a recipe for absolute failure, and it's very dangerous.
That's really the point that I was hoping you'd get to, is the larger ideology and its other manifestations would seem to be ignored under this latest prescription. We even have people proposing in the Congress resolutions to repeal the authorization for use of military force against al-Qaeda, because now we're just going to focus on the Islamic State. And Carolyn, I think you've particularly helpfully called attention to the fact that looming against this backdrop, but apparently getting a pass, is Iran, which this president is allowing to move inexorably towards its nuclear designs. Talk a little bit about the environment that is being created for Israel, as well as for our interests in that part of the world, and perhaps as a threat to us as well.
I mean, I think that Americans really have to be concerned about the United States, and I think that his strategy is so, for lack of a better term, stupid. But it's not just stupid, because I think it's willfully so. I mean, to say that Islamic State is not Islamic is willfully blind. And to pretend, like you were saying, that these are secrete threats, al-Qaeda on the one hand, Hamas on the other hand, which, of course, they sided with in the latest war, and, you know, al-Qaeda and Hezbollah, they're all secrete threats. You know, this is just ridiculous. It's not even ridiculous. It's so dangerous. I mean, there is an ideology that stands behind all of these organizations and governments and all of the rest of it that are bringing them together to fight the West, led by the United States, and that's jihad. They want to conquer the world for Allah. That's what they want. And the fact that you pretend away that this is really their belief system because you don't want Islam to be what they say it is. You know, nobody asked you what you think Islam is anyway, and I don't really frankly care what you think it is. They think that it is a genocidal creed, and they are fighting for it as such. And so you have to fight them on the basis of what they believe, not on the basis of what you want them to believe or what you think they ought to believe. And by not doing so, you're really just, you know, you're ensuring that anything that you do is going to be just sort of footprint in the sand. It's not going to mean anything over time, and it's devastating.
Yeah. If it were just footprints in the sand, it would be one thing. Unfortunately, it leads inexorably, these footprints, to our destruction if we are not alive to the real danger and taking the necessary steps to thwart it. And Carolyn Glick, your clarity on this point in the Jerusalem Post and in your terrific new book, The Israeli Solution, A One-State Plan for Peace in the Middle East, all of it's deeply appreciated and urgently needed on both sides of the pond. Come back to us again very soon, if you will. In the meantime, good holidays to you. Take care, Carolyn. Next up, Diana West joins us. We'll get her take on the same subject.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
An inspector general serves as an independent watchdog in each federal agency, promoting integrity and efficiency while rooting out fraud, waste, and abuse of authority in our government. Several important U.S. agencies have not had an IG for years, including the State Department, which has been without an IG for 5 years. During a constant wave of scandals in Washington, D.C., the newly published IG handbook by yours truly, Joseph E. Schmitz, couldn't be more timely. Every IG takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. By exposing fraud, waste, or abuse through audits, IGs satisfy the constitutional mandate that a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. The new IG handbook explains by what authority and for what purpose an inspector general does what he or she does on behalf of we, the people. Find the Inspector General Handbook on Amazon.com.
Are you looking to hire an IT specialist or a logistics expert, a medical technician, or a security professional? Well, there are some very qualified candidates out there, America's wounded warriors. These men and women returning from battle are eager to get back to life at home and a good job. Some have wounds you can see, and some have wounds you can't see, like post-traumatic stress disorder. For these accomplished professionals, Wounded Warrior Project has developed the Warriors to Work program, a career counseling service that helps wounded warriors translate their military experience to the civilian workplace. These warriors have world-class job skills and a unique perspective on teamwork. And to ensure proper placement for each individual, Wounded Warrior Project works with employers to find just the right candidate for the job. When your company is looking to hire talented, highly trained employees, contact Wounded Warrior Project at findwwp.org. Welcome home the brave.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real special forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real special forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
Ready to roll?
Go for it.
Hi, I'm Jessie Jane Duff. I'm a retired United States Marine Corps Gunnery Sergeant, and I served 20 years on active duty serving this great country. I'm with Concerned Veterans for America now. After I got off active duty, I realized I still wanted to be involved and help change the direction our country is going. Concerned Veterans for America offered me that great opportunity. If you want to get involved, and you're thinking of getting involved, please visit our website because we have many activities throughout the nation. We have wonderful representatives in each state who are putting forward different ways you can become engaged. So go to the website at concernedveteransforamerica.org, and you do not have to be a veteran. But if you support the freedoms that we all fought so hard for to defend this great nation, then consider participating in the many activities we are participating in and helping to change the direction our country is going.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back. We're joined by Diana West, syndicated columnist and pundit par excellence, a regular contributor to our programming here at Secure Freedom Radio. Always welcome as the flowers in May. Diana, tell us about what's going on with this business of, congressional advice and consent, it would appear, to the president's new strategy on the Islamic State.
Well, not welcome as the flowers in May. I would begin by saying I don't know what any of this has to do with defending the United States of America. And I think that this is at the crux of the serial disasters that we have had visited on us by our president and our representatives.
And to the extent that this is about to be compounded by sort of doubling down on a policy that, as best I can tell, has resulted in the arming, among others, of the Islamic State as a result of sending arms, training, and so on, material assistance of other kinds to so-called Syrian rebels in the past, do you anticipate we'll have a similar kind of problem in our hands in the future?
Well, yes. I mean, this is certainly what we've learned from, what we may observe, because the country as an entity has not learned this lesson, but this is what the pattern that we have had all too deeply ingrained in us. It begs the question, you know, what are we doing and why? And I think that this very basic question does seem to escape policymakers with the powers of the purse and strategy.
Yeah, and we're expecting today, as we speak, that will have happened by the time this program airs, presumably, some kind of congressional action in the House of Representatives on at least this bit of the arming of Syrian rebels. And we will be talking more, of course, with Diana and other guests about this in the days to come. But I think your prognosis, Diana, that this is unlikely to work out well is certainly well taken. And it is distressing in the extreme that so many in Congress seem still clueless about the extent to which this president's policies are, I call them malfeasant, but certainly very fraught with problems. We're talking with our friend and colleague Diana West, a syndicated columnist and author of two superb books, Death of the Grown-Up and American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. Diana, in your columns, you have been writing for quite some time now about our failure to understand the nature of the enemy we're confronting, and that seems very much to be at work here. Talk a little bit about how you see that enemy and what the problem is with correctly identifying it and responding to it.
Well, this has been the problem certainly since 9/11 in terms of a failure to confront the changes, the advances, the expansion of Islam in the world across continents, across nations, and into cultures. And of course, my main concern is Western culture, Europe, America, Israel, places where liberty, the rights of the individual are enshrined in their constitutions. This is antithetical to the Islamic world, to Islamic culture, to Islamic law. And it's a very basic thing. It's very easy to sketch out, to document, to show across history, to show in law books, and so on. But this has been impossible to in part to introduce into debate, to face. And so this is really the morass we find ourselves in. It is compounded by trends in the West, in America in particular, that have made it somehow equally opaque to lawmakers and to presidents what exactly constitute American interests. I mean, we were hit on 9/11, and our border has only gotten more and more open to the point of now nullification under President Obama. But President Bush also did nothing to safeguard our border. This is the first thing some nation or a person does if their home or their nation is invaded. You check your walls. You check your lines of defense. This has not been done. And so we have been pursuing a policy tied to the fortunes of warring primitive tribes in the Islamic world now for over a decade. And we are certainly no safer. We are less safe. We are more chaotic. And our civilization is really splintering at this point. I mean, it's a very fearful time. I've certainly never lived through such a period, but this is truly approaching a crisis. or we're passed into the crisis. I think we are. It's safe to say.
And I commend to everyone Diana's superb website, dianawest.net, where you will find, among other things, 9/11 the 13th. When will Uncle Sam pursue American, not Islamic interests? And Diana, in terms of the public safety and security, one thing I wanted to get your comment on was a report from our very valued friends at Refugee Resettlement Watch that the State Department is now poised in the coming fiscal year, which starts in a few days, to bring thousands of Syrians who are currently refugees in Turkey to this country. Is it fair to assume that there may be problems with vetting such people, as we have failed to vet some of the so-called moderate rebels in Syria as well?
Well, vetting is a joke. There is no vetting, whether they're moderate rebels or whether they are diseased aliens from Central America. I mean, there is no vetting. There is instead a movement by the bureaucracies, by the completely undemocratic, anti-democratic bureaucracies that control so much of the destiny of this nation, to I believe, engage in what I call population replacement. I mean, this extraordinary move to import populations, particularly from the third world into America, at such high levels and density, can only have the impact of changing this country into essentially a large version of the United Nations General Assembly. Now, this brings with it all kinds of problems when you import, for example, Syrians, alien culture, perhaps many radicals, militants, certainly proponents of Sharia among them, whether they are violently so disposed or simply practicing Sharia and wish to see more of it in this country. The demographics become changed by this anti-democratic in attempt to democratically change everything here. And I think that's what is going on. And it's a very nefarious scheme, very worrisome, and it is coming to your town, USA.
Well, and this is the thing that I've been struck by, Diana West, is that there are reasons to believe that we find top of the list of these refugees being resettled, people who have, as you say, not only a Muslim background, but a Sharia adherent background, seemingly because we are now taking as our guide to who should be resettled or allowed refugee status in this country the direction of the UN High Commissioner on Refugee Affairs, which is more or less an offshoot to these days of the Organization for Islamic Cooperation, the largest, certainly most powerful multinational bloc within the United Nations. And it is profoundly troubling that that's the kind of demographic change that's being wrought here, unbeknownst to most of us, and often in sort of underpopulated areas where there's a very strong social safety net. And lo and behold, out of these populations, you find, Somali terrorists emanating, for example. And Diana West, I am so sorry, we are out of time. There's so much more to talk about, but we're going to have to do it on another day. Thank you for the terrific work you do with your column, and check it out again, folks, at dianawest.net. Come back to us again very soon, Diana, and please, in the meantime, keep those home fires burning, because unfortunately, it seems as though they're being neglected by many of our government officials. Take care. We'll talk with you soon. Next up, former CIA clandestine officer John Strauch joins us to talk about how easily some of our key infrastructure can be attacked here at home and what we can do about it. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
Hugh Hewitt keeps the Constitution first.
That's what the left is about right now. Not about this or that.
Regulation or restriction.
Not about keeping weapons out of the hands of the mentally disabled. It's about attacking the Constitution. And by the way, you cannot mess with the Second Amendment without messing with the First and the Fourth and the Fifth and the Tenth. You either respect the Constitution or you don't.
The Hugh Hewitt Show. Weeknights at 6 after Michael Medved at 3 on 1260 WRC. New Choice. Intelligent Talk.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Congress is considering President Obama's strategy for defeating and destroying the self-styled Islamic State. Questions abound concerning the confidence being placed in the so-called Syrian rebels he is arming, ostensibly to fight this common enemy. Ironically, the House of Representatives may vote on this dubious initiative today, just as its new Select Committee on Benghazi Gate is holding its first hearing. The murders of four Americans in Libya was the byproduct of President Obama's previous efforts to arm and otherwise help rebels there, first to overthrow Muammar Gaddafi's government and then to get arms to fellow jihadists in Syria. As a practical matter, the present exercise will surely wind up doing what the last debacle did, helping enemies of this country and increasing threats to us. Memo to Congress, don't go there. This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
I was diagnosed with PTSD. I got out and was sort of on my own.
Since 2003, more than 103,000 service members have been diagnosed with PTSD. Hope for the Warriors focuses not on what happened, but what happens next. Don't let them be forgotten. You can help restore hope to our military families.
My wife and my son are affected by combat, too.
Visit hopeforthewarriors.org today.
People know that they can turn to them and trust them.
The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement. And how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
Every day, the men and women of the United States Marine Corps demonstrate their commitment to defend the American way of life. Since 1775, wherever the mission takes us, we always remember the land we call home. As Marines, we take a stand for our nation, for us all. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We're visiting with John Strauchs. He is the senior principal these days of Strauchs LLC, a specialist in matters involving the security of the nation, specifically some of its critical infrastructure. He served in the previous period as an operations officer with the CIA. He has authored more than 90 professional articles and 10 books, including the Hallcrest Report 2, which talked about the security threats to our country early on and discovered, among other things, that we have a very vast private security network, but it dwarfs that of law enforcement. John, welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. It's great to have somebody deeply knowledgeable about matters that we're very concerned about, namely the security of the United States, homeland security, all these years after 9/11. Glad to have you with us.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me. I look forward to our discussion.
Thank you. Well, let's talk, if you could, sort of at the 30,000-foot level, John. How would you characterize the security of the United States, the homeland of the United States specifically? Here we are 13 years after the attacks of 9/11.
Well, I think the problem we have is because we're a large country, a very large country, is that we're target-rich. And we can't protect everything. We can't protect every target. So the best we can do is try to prioritize. And how well we prioritize, I think, will determine how safe we are.
Yeah, a kind of triage approach makes sense. But we have presumably been doing that now for some 13 years. Let's get down to some specifics and assess how you estimate we stand. We've had several highly publicized incidents recently involving bridges in New York City. An island, of course, of Manhattan is dependent upon those bridges. Talk a little bit about those incidents and what they tell us about the security of those critical arteries into New York City, and also more generally about the extent to which transportation nodes like bridges are vulnerable to possible attack, not just incidents like this.
Well, New York City is, in terms of a microcosm, is probably a good example of it's a microcosm of the entire United States. New York City is extremely target-rich. I mean, if you count up all the tunnels, both for railroad trains and vehicles, all the bridges, then all the historic landmarks, for example, that people would recognize throughout the world, like the Empire State Building and certainly the World Trade Center, the new World Trade Center, it's target-rich. We're limited by, the city is limited by its resources. They're finite. They don't have an inexhaustible supply of money and personnel. So again, they have to triage the problem. And in my personal view is I think New York City has the best counterterrorism program in the country. In fact, in my opinion, I think they're better than the federal government, which tends to be stove by. Ray Kelly's legacy is possibly the best police commissioner the city has ever had. So I'm reasonably confident that the city is doing the triage properly and as best as it can with the resources it has.
My concern about that, I must tell you, John, is that Ray Kelly is no longer the police commissioner, of course. We have a new mayor. We have a new police commissioner. And it seems as though there have been substantial changes made, concessions notably to some that had previously been under surveillance or had been otherwise an object of an assertive sort of counterterrorism approach, notably in the Muslim community, but not exclusively. Does that trouble you that perhaps New York's guard is being let down?
Oh, yeah. I think the new mayor is a significant problem, perhaps an obstacle. Fortunately, I think Ray Kelly's legacy is still there. I've spent a lot of time on various projects coordinating with NYPD and other departments. But the new mayor is a serious problem, and he could be jeopardizing the city, in my view.
John, let me turn to another area of concern. And again, we're speaking with John Strauchs, a former clandestine officer in the Central Intelligence Agency, now a highly regarded homeland security expert. That is the Daily Caller. Undertook to assess the security at a nuclear power plant about 50 miles outside of Washington, D.C., the Calvert Cliffs nuclear power plant, and seemed to gain very close access to that facility without being even queried, let alone stopped. Does this suggest that even such high-value targets, such demonstrably potentially hazardous sites, should they be successfully penetrated and attacked, are not up to the kinds of standards that we would expect given the threat environment we're in today?
When I saw the news accounts of some reporters being able to get inside the plant, and that the fact that the front gate was not only unmanned, but it was padlocked shut, I was stunned, absolutely shocked. That is so inconsistent with the security policies of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and Department of Energy of years past that I frankly have no explanation for it. I cannot conceive of how this could possibly be secure.
Well, I guess the explanation that was given was, well, they didn't actually get inside the nuclear facility itself. But I don't need to tell a guy like you that you don't necessarily need to be inside to do considerable harm to such a place, and they seem to be able to get pretty darn close to it. John, one other item that came to my attention, and I'd be interested in your thoughts on this. I've been very concerned for some time about the security of the electric grid, among other assets, to attack by cyber means. And one of the things that picked up recently in an article at InfoSec Island is an article that Stuxnet-style attacks, malware, if you will, could be used to open the jails of America to release their prisoners and otherwise, completely upend our correctional facilities and penal system. This is, of course, not the only such place where a targeted attack on these control devices, so-called SCADA devices, could be very damaging. But talk a little bit about that cyber threat as you see it and how we're doing to protect ourselves against it.
Well, about 2 years ago, myself and my team, we were able to successfully demonstrate in terms of a live action how easy it was to get access to SCADA systems, particularly a component called Programmable Logic Controllers, PLCs. It's easy because PLCs are very dumb terminals, and the technology was developed at least 40 years ago, at a time when nobody thought about computer viruses or anything like that. So they're basically unprotected. They control nuclear power plants, water distribution, power generating, electric grid, natural gas distribution, everything. And the problem is there's millions of these PLCs out there that have no protection. Now, the fix is easy. It's not even a hack. You simply manipulate the library that's stored on the PLC to rewrite the instructions of what you want it to do. The problem is there's so many out there, several million probably, that it's simply a question of logistics. How can we get enough money, enough personnel to fix everything? It's almost an impractical problem. That is, there may be no solution. It's an easy fix, but the vulnerability is massive. And my concern is that nobody's paying very much attention to this vulnerability at the moment.
Well, and this is why we're delighted to have a chance to talk with you about it, because it clearly requires that level of attention. You say that it's an easy fix if you can devote the attention to each of these million or so of these PLCs. Is there any way to do this wholesale, or does it have to be done individual SCADA device?
You'd have to do it one by one. You'd have to go up and either patch the software on it or replace the device.
Yeah. Well, this certainly sounds like it ought to be one of the top priorities in this triage approach that you're talking about. John Strauss, we have to leave it at that for the moment, but I hope you'll come back to us soon with further updates and insights into these vulnerabilities and how we can, as a people, take steps to correct them as soon as possible. Next up, we'll get the boots-on-the-ground perspective on this war for the free world from Jim Hansen. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
An inspector general serves as an independent watchdog in each federal agency, promoting integrity and efficiency while rooting out fraud, waste, and abuse of authority in our government. Several important U.S. agencies have not had an IG for years, including the State Department, which has been without an IG for 5 years. During a constant wave of scandals in Washington, D.C., the newly published IG handbook by yours truly, Joseph E. Schmitz, couldn't be more timely. Every IG takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. By exposing fraud, waste, or abuse through audits, IGs satisfy the constitutional mandate that a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. The new IG handbook explains by what authority and for what purpose an inspector general does what he or she does on behalf of we, the people. Find the Inspector General Handbook on Amazon.com.
I was diagnosed with PTSD. I got out and was sort of on my own.
Since 2003, more than 103,000 service members have been diagnosed with PTSD. Hope for the Warriors focuses not on what happened, but what happens next. Don't let them be forgotten. You can help restore hope to our military families.
My wife and my son are affected by combat, too.
Visit hopeforthewarriors.org today.
P people know that they can turn to them and trust them.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I lost my arm.
I lost my legs.
But you can't see what I lost. Over 625,000 vets are suffering from traumatic brain injury
and post-traumatic stress. They're the wounds you can't see.
But with your help, we can expose the invisible wounds of war.
And get these veterans the help they desperately need.
100% of your donation goes toward building treatment centers. Help heal the invisible wounds of war. Donate at makeitvisible.org.
I had no choice the news that was given to me on August 2nd.
Gold Star mom, Debbie Lee.
But I did have a choice how I responded.
In August 2006, Mark Allen Lee became the first Navy SEAL to lose his life in Iraq.
I chose to put on Mark's boots, pick up his weapon, and stay in the fight for our troops and their families.
And America's Mighty Warriors was born.
Mark's name meant Mighty Warrior. And he definitely lived up to his name.
At AmericasMightyWarriors.org, you'll find Mark's last letter home.
Read it, and you'll know what AMW's about.
It's about service to active duty members of the military and their families.
Including care packages, visits, and more.
It's about supporting the wounded and the people who love them.
It's about the Gold Star family.
Special retreats, concerts, Mother's and Father's Day events to let them know they're loved and not forgotten. Donations are tax deductible and go directly where they're needed.
Read Mark's last letter home.
And just as he inspired his mom, let Mark inspire you to some random acts of kindness of your own.
At AmericasMightyWarriors.org.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at DailyCaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at DailyCaller.com.
Annie Soldier Incorporated was started in August 2003 as a simple family effort to help the soldiers in one Army unit, thus the name. However, due to overwhelming requests, on January 1, 2004, the Annie Soldier effort was expanded so it would include any member of any of the armed services in harm's way. Won't you please help? Find out how by going to www.anysoldier.com today.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. I'm very pleased to say we're joined by Jim Hansen, the former special operator in the United States Army, with whom we consult regularly in order to get the proverbial boots on the ground perspective on matters involving our national security. There's been a lot of talk lately about boots on the ground and how they're not going to be in Syria or in Iraq, of course, but I wanted very much to talk with Jim about what else is likely to happen in those places as the president amps up his efforts to destroy the so-called Islamic State. Jim Hansen, welcome back. It's good to have you with us, as always.
Always a pleasure, Frank.
So what did you make of the hearing that took place yesterday featuring the Secretary of Defense, Chuck Hagel, and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Martin Dempsey, before the Senate Armed Services Committee? They were asked a lot of questions about this so-called new strategy. How'd you think they did in answering them?
I thought it was kind of interesting. It was obvious they started with a set of talking points, but I don't think either one of those guys is too good when they go off prompter either. And they started telling some truths, you know, especially Dempsey. I mean, he said some things along the lines of, well, you know, if this whole arming the rebels and airstrikes thing doesn't work out, yeah, of course we're going to have to put ground troops in if we want to beat these guys. And that is so far from the Obama team's message that he was walking it back early yesterday afternoon. The Pentagon was sending out stuff saying, well, he may have said that, but that's not what he meant.
Yeah, what the general meant to say was the complete opposite of what he actually said.
Yeah, I mean, that truth-telling on the fly.
Yeah, and Jim, one other thing I wanted to ask you about in terms of what he said, he took a fairly insistent position that there was no way of defeating a group like ISIS or Islamic State militarily. He, under prompting from Carl Levin, did acknowledge that, well, there may be a military role to play in doing that, but that fundamentally it's not a military, let me put it this way, it's not something that the military can accomplish basically by itself. What's your take on that? Given that we've been told this is really an army, is it not something that can be defeated militarily?
Well, Frank, this is something that I hate because the left uses that there is no military solution, and Obama's been a proponent of this and a serial user of it, to try and argue that that's a reason not to use the military as part of the solution. Dempsey's absolutely right. The military alone cannot defeat ISIS. They can kill the bad guys and they can defeat their military capability. They can take back territory. They can shut them down. They can do a ton of things. But in the end, the full solution is part of the cultural war. It requires political, diplomatic, and cultural efforts as well. And he's right about saying that. So, of course, the military is absolutely essential if you're going to do that, because first you have to stop them from slaughtering people, you have to stop them from taking territory, you have to stop them from establishing a state, you have to beat them in war. Then out of war you make peace, and that's when the military's role changes and everybody else comes in and does their job.
And do you see, Jim Hansen, either in terms of what the administration has laid out at this point or in terms of what Congress seems to be mulling as a authorization for the use of military force, anything remotely like that sort of comprehensive strategy for dealing with these guys?
Oh, absolutely not. Yeah, I mean, these guys are a soup sandwich, paddling a chicken wire canoe, swinging a football bat, wearing bowling cleats. They are absolutely disorganized and not capable of putting together a coherent strategy, and if they could, getting anybody to buy onto it. I mean, they've got, you know, the coalition of the non-existent is what they put together for this, and I don't think they've got a chance of doing it. That doesn't mean they shouldn't try, and it doesn't mean we shouldn't support, especially on the right, Congress having their constitutional role in this game. Now, whether that's an authorization to use military force or, as I would prefer, I think we should declare war. I mean, that's what we should do. It's been so long since we've done that. But there is a good case to be made that declaring war, if this is going to be a sustained conflict, is the right thing to do. Either way, Congress needs to weigh in. Let our Constitution do its job. It's the Constitution's birthday. You know, let it actually have a role in our governmental affairs.
And Jim Hansen, to the extent that the Congress is going to provide some sort of authorization for the use of force, and I'm with you, I think it should take the form of a declaration of war. You've indicated that your view is, at Black5.net notably, that ought to be a declaration of war broadly scoped, not narrowly focused on the latest sort of, I think of it, shiny dangling object of ISIS. Dangerous as it is, it's just a part of this global jihadist enterprise that we were talking about earlier in the program with Carolyn Glick and Diana West.
Frank, they're fighting us. They have declared a global jihad. So a global jihad requires a global war to combat it. And we can pretend, you know, we can do all the euphemizing we want of this. But if your enemy is fighting you everywhere they can muster 10 jag-offs and a black flag, then we need to act like that's an actual threat. That is an actual existential threat culturally, and take it on. So Congress's role militarily is to declare war on anybody who runs that black flag up and let them know that they are not welcome. They are going to be fought with all our effort and energy, killed, and all of their supporters taken out as well.
You know, Jim, I don't know if you follow the intricacies of this sort of theological component to this global jihad, but a very interesting video was recently produced by, among others, friends of ours like Robert Spencer and Bill Warner and David Wood. And they made a point, which I think is really important for us to take aboard, that what's qualitatively different about this new phase of the jihad, namely the establishment, the declaration of a caliphate, is that under the doctrines of Sharia, that opens the door to what is known as offensive jihad, which is not to be confused with the defensive jihad that bin Laden and others claim to be waging. And the distinction may be lost again on most of us because it, you know, they're killing us either way. But to the extent that this marks a new opportunity to engage much more massively, comprehensively, globally, it seems to me it's all the more reason why we better be getting clued up on the Islamic roots of this jihadist enterprise and the implications of our failing to fight it with everything we've got.
Yeah, no doubt. And the thing people seem to completely ignore is they get to vote. You know, we can say whatever we want. And Obama can say the Islamic State's not Islamic. Obama can say whatever he wants. Doesn't change the facts on the ground. They're expanding, they're changing their tactics, they're succeeding in a lot of ways. And the sooner we act as if that is an actual event, not just, you know, news that we can ignore when the news cycle changes, we'll be a lot better off in the long run.
And I guess the basic point is, in order for us to have a long run to be better off in, we better be getting the short run straight. And just very quickly, Jim Hansen, if you had a word of advice for the Congress in terms of the pending question of arming the Syrian moderates, we're told, moderate rebels, would you go there?
Yeah, I mean, we have to pick a dog. You have to have a dog in the fight. So pick one, try and corral them, try and do what we can, and take on, but at that point, I would go two directions, at Assad and at ISIS. But if we don't have a dog in the fight, we are cheating ourselves. So as heinous as it is and as bad as they all are, we need to pick the least rabid one and try and turn them in some, or at least use them. We don't have to turn them, but we can use them.
Well, my concern is that it's not entirely clear who those least bad of these rabid dogs are, and chances are we're going to get bitten by them, and that will be a problem for us as well. Jim, thank you very much for your time today. As always, we appreciate your past service to our country and that you're providing, notably at black5.net. Keep it up. Come back to us again soon. I hope the rest of you will come back to us again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Affney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.